that there were once creatures both small and gigantic that were living on the earth that were destroyed in different cataclysms, and that a lot of the rocks that we're taught are formed through compression of sea life and land life that's pressed down for millions and millions of years under the seafloor. That's not necessarily accurate, and that many of the rocks that we're actually seeing are literally hardened remains of different creatures. The tissues are all around us, but our eyes are not trained to see them.
With the global economy being in shambles and central bankers moving towards a reset, it's never been a better time to protect your wealth by owning precious metals. Silver is at historical lows, and that's the best time to buy. Contact Andy at milesfranklin.com. Tell him Sarah sent you. He promised me he'll guarantee you the lowest price anywhere in the country. Remember, email Andy at milesfranklin.com and tell him Sarah sent you. It's never been a better time to protect your future than now. Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have Mike Wilkerson coming to the show, and he is working on this field called biogeology. That's the term he came up with. And this has to be one of the more fascinating things I have seen in a while. And he has so much evidence for it. I don't know what to even think about it at this point, but because it's out there. But it's hard not to be absolutely fascinated and want to know more, because everything he's showing me on and showing us in this interview tells me that maybe he's on to something. And I saw some of his clips. He was on the SGT report, and then I started watching some of his stuff, and I thought, this is absolutely fascinating. I want to learn more. And he's seeing these rocks that look like hearts and mountains that look like elephants, and he's showing us how it's anatomically correct in all these ways, 50 different ways that it matches up to biology and why. And he's coming in, and when he gets pushback, and I'm telling him this, I want you to get even more pushback, and so that you can try to answer all these questions. You can't, it's very difficult to be proven wrong unless people really challenge you. But so far, no one's been able to challenge him in ways that he hasn't been able to come up with an answer. And so people are more and more intrigued. He's getting huge followings because of that. And it's just absolutely fascinating. If you're listening to this on podcast, then I recommend you come to my website and look at this in video if you have time, so you can see some of these images. It's just absolutely fascinating. Otherwise, I think you should be able to follow along mostly in podcasts and audio. So if you want to look at the video, or if you want to look at the video and see the pictures, go to sarahwestall.com and you'll see it on my website. You can search by his name, or it'll be on the front page for a while. I also wanted to tell you that for my patrons, we know that the C60 is the best way to deal with your immunities from an overall perspective, and my patrons get 10% off on that. There are coupons for C60 for regular listeners as well on my shop. Just, it's so important for us to really be focusing on our immunities right now. So let's get into this really great show with Mike Wilkerson. Mike, thank you so much for joining the program.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
You have the most crazy and interesting thing I've seen in a while. And with all the hard shows I do, I thought, gosh, I want to do that, because I love getting on the box. I like looking at things that are completely different. And we've been kind of bogged down with really serious issues. And I not that this isn't, it's not as serious, It's very interesting. It's about history. It's about, you call it biogeology. Can you explain how you got into this, where you learned that this was even a thing?
Yeah, it started a couple of years ago. I was watching all sorts of different videos on different unusual topics, and one of the topics that I came across was something called mud fossils, and that's basically the idea that certain aspects of what we've been taught about geology, some pretty major ones, are not actually accurate, and that the amount of time that it takes for something to fossilize, for example, is we're told that it happens in the space of millions of years of time, when in reality, under certain conditions, it can happen very, very rapidly. Mm-hmm. And so that's one aspect of it. And then the other aspect of it is that there were once creatures both small and gigantic that were living on the earth that were destroyed in different cataclysms, and that a lot of the rocks that we're taught are formed through compression of sea life and land life that's pressed down for millions and millions of years under the seafloor. That's not necessarily accurate, and that many of the rocks that we're actually seeing are literally hardened remains of different creatures. The tissues are all around us, but our eyes are not trained to see them.
Well, and how many of these rocks would you say? You say they're everywhere. Half the rocks we're looking at is really human or biological remains?
It really depends on where you are. I happen to live in a place in Spain where there's a lot of traces of cataclysm, mud flood, and volcanic. And the research that I started on initially had to do with the idea of titans, which it sounds utterly crazy. These talking like beyond giants. We're talking about creatures that are the size of mountains. And it was a variety of different topics that got me considering the possibility that a mountain here in the area that I live in Spain could actually have been one of these ancient creatures. I started with the idea of mud floods. Mud floods are something that a lot of people, a lot of independent researchers are looking at that are the undeniable traces and remnants of worldwide cataclysms that literally wiped out, life as we know it, possibly multiple times. And the traces of that are found in cities all around the world. There's another topic that a lot of people are diving into about Tartaria, which is an ancient empire that we learn nothing about in schools that happens to be the largest empire that ever existed. So there are all these different topics that I was looking into at the same time. And then I saw a video on the subject of Titans, and I never thought anything of it because it seems like a silly topic. But when I was watching this one video in particular, it showed some pictures of an island in Maui, another place in Iceland, and these are places that look very much like elephants. And the mountain
Do you have those pictures behind
the town? Yeah, I do.
That way, when you're talking about them, we can look at them.
Okay, so this is one of the images that really got me thinking, because this particular rock looks a heck of a lot like an elephant turning to the side. And a lot of people might be thinking this is totally crazy. This is what's known as pareidolia, where you're looking up at a cloud or you're looking at anything and you see a particular pattern and you assume that what you're seeing is actually real. So this is the mountain in Javia, Spain, which is where I live. And it's known affectionately as the elephant by locals for obvious reasons. When you get from afar, it looks a lot like an elephant that's lying on its stomach. And I've always been fond of it, but it never occurred to me that it might actually a titan, which sounds totally absurd. But I work as a chiropractor, and I've studied a lot of anatomy, and I had been up to this eye on numerous occasions. And so after seeing these videos, I started to wonder, is there any truth at all to this? And I'd already been watching these videos on mud fossils and observing the rocks around me and pondering, how could these rocks have possibly formed the way they did, because they did look very biological in nature. So I started to get online and on Google Earth and start to tour around the island. I can do that, around the mountain. So this is the mountain, and you can see here. So since I did the videos, I've done a five-part series called Unveiling a Titan. You can see This is the thumbnail for the first of the videos. The tusks had to be photoshopped, obviously.
Yeah.
But since I did that, the mountain has actually been edited on Google Earth. This is how it used to look, and you can see the eye clearly, and I could soar all around. But now on Google Earth, the sections of the mountain that I reported on in the second and the third video have been edited out, which is a fascinating thing. But if you get in really close, they open up. But now you can't get further away and see the bigger picture. But initially, what I was doing is I was looking around because pareidolia is where you see a mountain and it looks like a face, and the shadows are hitting it just right. And so, you know, to make the assumption that that's a real creature would be, you know, a delusion.
Yeah. Well, do you have a picture of it before Google wiped it off?
Let's see here. That's the backside. You mean a picture of the Google Earth section?
Like, yeah. This is, do you have it before Google took it off?
That's taken with Google Earth there. And you know the eye is here, and this section is actually an ear. So let's see. So
it's hard for me to see that. You know, I look at it and go, I don't know if I see it. But you really analyze it, you can see it better, I suppose.
Yeah. So basically, if you look at it from this angle, there are cutouts here on both sides where the head becomes the shoulder. And there's also, if you from further down, there's a plateau right here where the trunk would be. So you've got the head shape, you've got the back, and then you have the eye right where the eye should be. So as I started to fly around this mountain, as I'm doing now with you, and before there was a lot more detail, I remembered that I'd been up this canyon, which is exactly right where the legs would be, and there's the remnants of a rib cage. You can see the lines coming down. Some of the people are thinking this guy's out of his mind, crazy, but as I started to look at this more, I had been at the eye on numerous occasions, and it's a very unusual cave. And there are all kinds of channels going back in different ways. And there's this little section here. And so rather than just give in to pareidolia and assume that, oh, this is an elephant, I decided to go back to the anatomy books, and I started looking at elephant anatomy and comparing the things that are in the fossil record. This is the remains of an elephant. This is turned to limestone. The mountain itself is made out of limestone, which we're told from mainstream geology is composed mainly of skeletal fragments, marine organisms, corals, forms, and mollusks. So what we know of limestone is that it's actually made of bone. So that's kind of how I started to get on the topic. And as I went into it more and was studying the anatomy, I decided that the only way to proceed would be to have a laundry list of different kinds of things that I'd be expecting to find as I went back to the eye. So I got online and I was studying the anatomy in 3D, and there are all kinds of different bones, structures that you know, when you look at the eye socket of a vertebrate, not just an elephant, but any of the vertebrates, then what you have are places where the bones meet, and they're called sutures. And so, for example, if you look here, I can show you on an elephant. I'm not trying to be disingenuous by showing you as a human, for example, this is a fissure for the optic nerve. There's a section here where it goes down into what would be the nasal cavities. The eye is here. And so I started to look at these different, you can see the mouse when I'm moving it, right? These different lines. There in the cave, there are sloping channels that go down exactly here And
It's exactly the
and
shape of that. So you're, I mean, it's just thing after
yeah,
thing after thing is consistent with what the remains
exactly.
would look like.
Yeah, so I had a list before I went up to the eye of different anatomical features. And when I got there, I found 10 of the things that were on my list. I found the optic fissure, I found sutures, the overall shape, the position. This was a big one here. If you look at this, this is called the infraorbital foramen. All vertebrates have it. It's where there are nerves and blood vessels that come through here. And that is actually, where did that go? If we look at, there's so much material, it's sometimes hard to keep it all straight. But that's what you're looking through right there. So this is what I'm talking about. This here is the eye socket of an elephant. And see this line here? That's the suture between those two bones I was showing before. And this line here is in the exact same location. Even does a little jog right there, just like this one does. So it started to get pretty weird when I got up there because I was finding so many things. Here's the optic fissure in an elephant's skull, and that's in the exact same location in the cave.
It's not just this one cave, though. You started finding these anomalies all over the place, right? Like there's heart. I saw heart pictures of rocks that look like. Do you have
Yeah,
any of those pictures?
that came later because what happened was I started looking at all the rocks differently after this because I went up to the eye, then I started to hypothesize that there might be an ear. And when I started looking into that, that's when it got really strange because not only did I not know there was a cave there, but I went looking for the cave, just hypothesizing that it was there, and I found out that there is a cave there. And without having known anything about it, it turned out to be the most thoroughly excavated cave in all of Europe. Which was very unexpected. They had a whole team of archaeologists that went up there. They did 3D mapping of the internal parts of the cave. They found the remains of humans. There were cave paintings, and then I started to analyze the anatomy of the inner ear and compare that with all of this amazing footage that they had gotten. And that really caused me to start looking at everything differently. So I did a video. The one of the things that was frustrating to me about the whole concept of mud fossils is that there are tons and tons of videos out there of people holding up different rocks and making, you know, outlandish claims about what those rocks are. And, you know, sometimes they look like what the person is claiming, and other times it just looks like a rock. So I figured if there's any chance that there's any truth to this and that soft tissue can actually petrify, not just fossils, because when we think of fossils, we're talking most of the time about skeletons. And according to mainstream geology, it's very, very rare that soft tissue will petrify, because normally it's decomposed by worms and larvae and microbes long before it could ever turn to stone. But there are a number of conditions in which things can turn to stone. So I was walking in a river bottom and I came across this rock, and it was utterly mind-blowing because I recognized it immediately as a heart. And having studied anatomy, I immediately spotted between 6 and 8 different specific anatomical features. I brought the rock home. I started to pull out my anatomy books and look at a lot of the different structures that were in the hearts and the anatomy books. And before long, I had this list that you see on the right. And I even purchased an endoscopic camera so I could get inside and look at the chambers. But without going into the specifics of the anatomy, this rock now the list is up to 20 different specific anatomical features. So to me, at some point, you have to start questioning how many coincidences does it take before there starts to be a recognizable pattern. And that was what was happening with the mountain, and that caused me to look at all the stones differently. And then I figured, okay, well, this should be repeatable, because that's the whole idea behind the scientific method, is you have some kind of an idea, you're looking at the physical world around you, empirical evidence, and you're trying to make sense of patterns. And if, you know, if there's a recognizable pattern, then you have to set up some kind of a test to see if it's repeatable. So I went out into the river bottoms and I was filming. And in the space of about 15 minutes, I found a whole bunch of different rocks that had these same anatomical features. And you can see there's very specific places where there are openings. They have a particular shape. And this reoccurs across different sizes. So it was a fascinating thing to.
Isn't there some more to thing too about the blood and the iron? I was seeing.
Right.
You were. Go ahead.
Mm. Well, that I was finding with both the mountain and the rocks themselves, because if we go into, let's see here. So if we look at bone, for example, this is the inside of a femur, and you've got the hard bone on the outside, and then on the inside you have what's known as trabecular bone. In the head it's called sponges bone. And this is where the blood is produced in the body. It's produced in our skull and in our long bones. And blood is rich in iron because it contains, you know, it's got hemoglobin, and hemoglobin is rich in iron. So as I was walking around the plateau that was at in front of Mont Gaux, I was finding all kinds of very unusual rocks that I was having a hard time explaining based on what I knew about geology. You know, these channels are going through these rocks, and they're filled with this reddish earth, but not just the reddish earth, they're actually caked with iron ore. So this, I'm hypothesizing, is actually the blood of what would be trabecular bone. This is what trabecular bone looks like under a microscope, and it's fractal in nature. So it goes from bigger to smaller and smaller, and it looks like Swiss cheese. And if you look at bone, this is skull bone, and it's looks like a sandwich. You have the top, and then you have this blood-rich area here, and then you have the bottom. And then the trabecular bone. This is how bone grows. It grows like trees. So I was finding a lot of different rocks that had these channels and had the iron ore stuck to them. And then I was seeing sections of the mountain where portions of the mountain were broken away, and then it was reddish underneath. And so I believe that's this outer section of the sandwich, so to speak, that's gone, and it's exposing the blood-rich section inside.
Does it have the porous like the bones do? Does it have the?
Yeah, and in fact, when you get up close to some of these rocks, they look like you can see micro blood vessels going through them. This is an example on the top of the mountain of this sponges bone. So if you think of that, this has all been worn away by wind and rain, but you can still see little traces of red here. But compare that to this. Or to this, it's exactly the same. So the elements have eroded this part because.
Can you zoom in to be able to see that the spongy?
Sure.
No, not on this, but on the reel, on the rock.
So this is one where the earth has gone out of it. Let's see. I don't have any good samples. I wasn't planning on going into this much detail on this topic here. This is what I call cortical bone, and I've done 5 videos on this topic. They're called Unveiling a Titan. First video is just an overview. Second video covers the eye. Third video goes in detail into the ear. The fourth video is looking at the histology, which is the technical term for the tissues. And I analyze all of the different rocks all over the mountain, and I show how that corresponds to what you would expect to find anatomically in that part of the mountain. And it lines up time after time after time. So this is what would be known as cortical bone. So if you think of the outer sandwich that I talked about, this doesn't have much in the way of what's known as vascularity, which are the blood vessels. So that's going to be more like solid rock, and then the occasional little channel going through it. And that is exactly what this is showing. You can see that there's a chunk of this rock that is broken off here, and then it's revealed right inside this reddish earth, which is literally oozing out of this channel. So this is cortical bone, And then you have the smaller blood vessels, but it doesn't look like the trabecular bone that I showed in these other rocks. Here you can see, you want to get up close. This is a good example. If you get up right up close to it, you can see that it has a very biological look and feel to it. And then you can see the iron ore that's caked in going right through where this blood vessel would have been.
This is so strange. And, okay. So can you get yourself back?
I was just going to show you this
quick. Going.
So this is a list of coincidences with the mountain. So people who are interested in this can pause it and they can start to read through this and get an idea of just how specific these are and just how many of them there are. And that is just the first half of them, because just on the mountain alone, there are over 50 different specific coincidences. And the last one is the Google Earth censorship, because after I reported on the mountain, this is how it used to look from a distance and how it looks now. As soon as you get away from it, it's all blurry. And the only section of the mountain that's blurry is the section where the eye and the ear are. And if you go to any of the other mountains in the region, now people might be thinking, it doesn't look very much like an elephant from this side. And this portion of the mountain has all collapsed. According to mainstream geology, this curvature here is what's known as a synclinal. And that's when there's an actual major collapse of the mountain. I have an example of that somewhere, but I'm not going to go looking for it. You had a question a moment ago.
Now, are you getting pushback? Are you getting anything that, actually, with this kind of a tough subject, I would think you'd want some pushback so you can question yourself and you can keep validating what you're finding.
I've gotten some very good questions. There have been basically, when it comes to criticism, there have been three categories. There have been people who have just dismissed it with a hand wave and said, this is ridiculous, and they won't even give the idea the time of day. And then there have been other people who lead with insults, and I don't even pay attention to them. And those both of those categories have been a very, very small percentage. And then there have been other people that are like, yeah, but what about? And then they have these questions, and I have answers to a lot of those questions. And I had tons of questions myself, and it's only been now. The video that I'm working on, that I'm hoping to finish in the next couple of days, I'm about to go on vacation, so I'm working frantically to finish it, is all about the different explanatory models for how these things could have come about. And initially, the only thing I had as an explanation was mud flood, but that didn't make any sense for the mountain. I want to explain a point I forgot to explain. The idea behind the mud fossils is that when they're buried in mud, there's no air there. And so what happens is the microbes and the larvae that would normally eat away at the flesh and cause it to decompose, they can't thrive in that environment. And so then what happens is a slow exchange between the mud and the earth that's surrounding the tissue with the gases and the fluids that are in the tissue. And that exchange, we're told, happens over millions of years. Like, we know that petrification, you know, can occur. This is a pine cone that was covered by a volcanic flow in Argentina. Everybody knows about petrified wood. So we know that organic material can petrify. It's just that we're given timelines that stretch in the tens to hundreds of millions of years. So we've never really gone around looking at things from the perspective of, wait a minute, could that have been something that petrified in recent times? Well, there's a lot of evidence for recent mud flood, and we can see it in our cities. And anyone, you know, I encourage anyone to go out there, do searches for mud flood, Tartaria, look into star forts. These are incredibly interesting topics that none of us hear anything about.
What's a star fort? I don't know what a star fort is.
Let's see. This is a star fort. Oh, wait, I'm not sharing. Hold
no,
on.
You're not. And you might want to show us that pine cone picture, too.
Oh, yeah, thank you. I forgot I wasn't sharing. Okay, so this is the pine cone I was referring to. Great detail can be preserved in these fossils. It has to do with mud. has to do with electricity. These are the kinds of things that I'll be covering in my next video. So star forts, this is a total aside, but it's just something for people who are curious they can start to look into. We're not taught about these at all. We're told that they're bastion forts that were built in the 15 to 17, 1900s to protect against cannon fire. And the more you look into them, the more you realize that they just don't make any sense as far as that narrative. But
why?
Same thing with Tartaria.
Why about
because
the star?
They're far too grand, and they're all over the world. My friends have mapped so far to date 5,000 of these. They're on every continent, and mainstream history just doesn't cover them properly. It's just it's a rabbit hole people can go down. Star forts and then Tartaria as well. If we do a search online, most people have never even heard of Tartaria. So if you just look into maps, you'll see that Tartaria, we're told it was just a roving Mongol tribes, but it was an empire that stretched all across all of Asia, all of Siberia, into Europe, into North and South America. It was a worldwide empire that people are only just now starting to really wake up to. And if you go into the old history books, it's undeniable that Grand Tartaria was everywhere. And the star forts and the Tartarian architecture, what we call Greco-Roman architecture, are incredibly fascinating to look into. And there's probably a lot of historians out there that think I'm off my rocker, but
well, it's just interesting.
Yeah,
what
encourage
is
people to look into it.
What do you think the star forts are for? I mean, when you hear star fort, you're thinking aliens, yeah, or something. But
some say they were for mining purposes. What we know about them is a lot of the old world cities, you know, when we look at Europe, thinking of Paris and Copenhagen and Stockholm and Amsterdam and Antwerp and all these great cities all over Spain. These were all built on and around star forts. The star forts were actually there first, and this is provable because you can go back and you can look at the old maps of the cities that are, you know, from several hundred years ago in the old books and find them.
This picture, that picture you had up was built all around those star forts, or that is a star fort.
That is a star fort, and a lot of the star forts have been covered in mud. So that gets back to the mud flood topic. And mud flood is just a potential explanation for how these things could have petrified, getting back to that. And then we have all kinds of examples of buildings around the world that we're told were carved out of stone, but when you look into them in more detail, it makes a lot more sense that this was actually volcanic ash, volcanic flow, and that buildings were melted. And then they've gone in. You can see here, this is in recent times. This is in ancient times. So there's a whole lot that we don't know about our history. And
that's for sure.
And when it comes to geology, I'd say more than ever that's the case.
Okay. Well, I think this is really interesting. Where can people find more about your work? I would like, well, first of all, tell them where they can find more about your work.
The channel name is Stellium 7, and sometimes people put a space between the stellium and the 7, and then they find a whole bunch of info on astrology. So that is the channel name. And
excellent. Okay, so you have a science background. You're a chiropractor. You have a lot of biology. So you're able to then compare it to all this stuff. I like the idea of you getting respectful pushback of people who are trying to think of alternative ways of what this could be, so that you can completely flush it out. I think it's absolutely fascinating. And so when people push back, are you able to flush out more from this? I mean, because...
Absolutely. I'm constantly learning from the questions that people are giving me. I'm not trying to present myself as an expert. I'm not a geologist. I'm not a paleontologist, anthropologist, any of these. I have a degree in chiropractic. I've studied a lot of anatomy and a lot of physiology and histology. And so, you know, somebody else who's an expert in one of these fields would probably accuse me of the Dunning-Kruger effect, basically saying that I know just enough about something to get myself into trouble. And I've attempted to the best of my ability to approach this using scientific method, not making assumptions, trying to get ideas and hypotheses before going out to look. With the rocks, the heart stones, I have, which I'll present in the next video, I have what I believe is a pretty good explanation for how this could be happening, that's based on lahars and volcanic activity. And, you know, people can watch the videos and decide for themselves whether any of it makes sense. I've had a number of people with science backgrounds praise the work that I've done and concur with my findings. So,
it's pretty common that new ways of thinking about things come from people in different fields. It happens right all the time. I mean, in fact, almost, 95% of the time.
This needs to happen more and more, because what we have is such a compartmentalization in every field right now, in politics, in government, in academia, where you get specialists who are experts in a particular topic. What do they say? They say an expert is someone who knows more and more about less and less until they know absolutely everything about nothing. You know, and there's some truth to that, because you become so snowed in with your area of expertise that you're unable to see the bigger picture. And you might not even know what the person sitting next to you is doing in your office or, you know, in the school, if you're a professor or something. So what we need is more cross-disciplinary activity. And I think that's why I've been able to start to recognize these patterns, is that I started with a degree. I grew up in California, and I went to the University of Santa Barbara, and I had a degree in the humanities. And so that combined with the science, I don't know, maybe it just it makes me more apt to pattern recognition. But
that's absolutely excellent.
Either that or I'm wrong about everything. I could be wrong about everything. But
well, no, but you know what? You can't learn and you can't figure out new things without taking different perspectives. And that's all of what I'm trying to do with my show, is that's why I bring on people like you who just see things from a completely different perspective, because you're not going to get there. Sometimes people are wrong, but it's okay to be wrong as long as you're flushing something out that seems like it might make sense, right? I don't think you're wrong. I'm just saying that's how we grow as a human species, is that we ask questions and we look at things from different paradigms. And whether you're wrong or not, I applaud the effort, because that's how we grow and that's how we learn. And then you can't be wrong until somebody can show you why you're wrong and can come up with the same. That's why I asked you about your pushback. Are you coming up with, and if all these pushback, the questions came.
Surprisingly, I thought I would get a lot more, but it may be that it just hasn't come out into the mainstream enough. And once it does, then, you know, people start making debunk videos and call me a crackpot. And I would say, these are exciting times, because there are a lot of, you know, what do you say, sacred cows that are starting to be questioned, and we're learning more and more all the time about the nature of our physical reality all kinds of different aspects
absolutely
of the physical world. And so one of the things that I've tried to encourage people to do is don't take my word for any of this stuff. Look at the information that I present, go out and test things yourself, see if you find because with the heart stones, the thing that's unusual about them is they're very, very specific. You know, it's easy to find a stone that's an oval shape or a sphere or something like that. It's an entirely different thing to find something that has specific channels exactly where they should be, has a particular form. And so that's what I show in Mud Fossils, The Heart of the Matter 1 and 2. I show people how to recognize the anatomy. I'm showing it with 3D rendering. I'm going inside. I'm showing the chambers. And then there's another video that I did that I showed earlier that was petrified organs, giant's hearts, because I'm finding them on larger and larger scales. Hold on, I'll show. This is the biggest one I brought home. Try not to hurt myself, but this is the exact same shape. It's got the openings for the. Oh, I'm not even showing my screen, am I?
No, you
Sorry.
are.
Oh, I was. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I can see you.
Oh yeah, I'm showing me now. Okay, so there's the artery openings. It's also got the aorta exactly where it should be. So I've shown this over and over again across all different sizes, and I teach people how to recognize them in petrified organs, giants' hearts, and how to spot them. And so they can go out and test this themselves. And I'm not saying that all rocks are organs by any means. Some rocks are volcanic, they come from volcanoes, you can see them forming. Some may be fragmented portions of Titans that I mean, this mountain that I studied is, it's 2.5 miles long, 4 kilometers, and it's 2,500 feet high. So it's not a
Gosh.
small creature. So, and
It's just very strange. It's a different look. We're almost microscopic if those are the size of the animals. So interesting. Okay, so they can get to your channel, Stellium7. Do you have a website or just a YouTube channel?
not yet. I don't have a website,
That's
just the
okay.
YouTube channel. I've got I put them on BitChute because after the editing of Google Paranoid, so the videos are up there. People are welcome to mirror them if they like. And then I'll be eventually doing a website, and I've got a book planned, but I'm finishing another book right now that I started a long time ago. So that comes first.
Well, I'm sure so you're finding people have a lot of interest because it's a new out of the box thing and things are making sense. I mean, I would like to hear some more pushback, not for, from others so that it can get flushed out even more. But
Yeah.
at this point, if every time
The
someone's coming at you, there's you look into it and you find the answers for it, that's cool. That means, okay, maybe you got something here. This is really cool.
yeah.
Yeah.
The problem from the mainstream geology side is that these ideas, if there's truth to them, they completely, they shake the foundations of what we know about geology, what we know about petrogenesis, which is the formation of rock. So it can't be accepted. It's way too out there. So the only that's why I've been trying to teach people how to see these things, and maybe I'm just teaching them my delusions, but I don't think so. And they can decide for themselves,
They can decide for themselves and look at it. It's another way of looking at things. Well, thank you so much. This is such an exciting, very interesting topic to look at and to at least ask questions. If it's not true, then why? Tell me why. That's you have to start with that and if you keep coming back with answers of, well, it seems like I have an answer for all these things, then there's something to it. So thank you.
That
Go
was
ahead.
the unexpected part. When I first started looking at the mountain from afar, I didn't think anything of it. But when I started finding all these very specific connections, it was just like,
Well, welcome to the world of being a crazy nut job. You're going to stay there until you convince yourself one way or the other whether you're right or wrong. And then if you convince yourself that you're right, which I mean, everything you showed me so far makes me want to look into it more. I haven't seen anything that is like, well, hey, let's look into this more. But you'll be in this world forever, I think, now. Once you're there, you can't unlearn. So thank you so much
Yeah,
for joining the
things
program. Go ahead.
are. No, I was just going to say things are more interesting than ever. So
Yes, they
it's
are.
fun. It's an interesting time of discovery. So I encourage everybody else to go looking.
Well, thanks again for coming
Thank
to the
you.
show.
My pleasure. Bye bye.